The following morning, Mzilikazi was on his throne again, so undaunted by the previous day's exertions that when the Chawala bull was loosed into the arena, his sons had bodily to restrain him from rushing out to slay it with his bare hands. A champion from each regiment had been chosen and stripped down to his loincloth. They waited in squatting ranks on each side of Mzilikazi's chair. The bull came into the ring at the charge, horned head held high, red dust spurting from under his hooves, and his wild eyes glaring. He was pure, untainted black, with a huge humped back and glossy, burnished hide. Carefully picked from all the king's herds, he was the finest animal in the whole of Matabililand, and he made an arrogant circuit of the arena, stepping high, snorting and dropping his head, to hook with curved horns at anything in his path. The king, held by his sons, but struggling against their grip, was almost incoherent with excitement. And now he lifted his spear, and his arms shook violently as he screamed, "Bulala Inkonzi! Kill the bull!" The waiting men leapt to their feet, saluted the king, and then raced out, spreading into a half-moon-shaped line, instinctively adopting the jikela, the movement of encirclement. The black bull swung to meet them, came up short on locked front legs, his head swinging as he measured his charge. Then the great rounded quarters bunched under him, and he surged forward, picking a man in the centre of the line and thundering down on him. The man he had chosen stood his ground, spreading his arms in a welcoming gesture, and the bull dropped his head and hit him. Clearly, Zuga heard the brittle snap of bone as the warrior absorbed the shock of impact against his chest and then locked his arms around the animal's neck and held on. The bull tried to toss him, hooking and throwing his head high, but the man held on and was cruelly thrown about. But his body blocked the bull's sight and brought him to a halt. The racing line closed about him instantly, and abruptly the bull's great hump body was smothered by the rush of naked black men. For long seconds the bull struggled to remain upright, but they bore him down and tore his legs out from under him, so he hit the dusty earth with a heavy thump and a groaning bellow. A dozen men seized the long horns, and using their leverage began to twist them against the massive inert weight of his pinned body. Slowly, sweating and straining, they forced his head around, and the bull kicked his hooves in the air, his bellows becoming more desperate and strangled. The king leapt up and down in his chair, screaming with excitement, and the roar of voices was like the sound of surf on a gale-driven coast of rock. Inch by inch, the huge horned head revolved, and then suddenly there was no longer resistance. Zuga heard the crack of the vertebra, sharp as a musket shot, even above the thunder of the assembled nation. The horned head flicked through another half-turn. The legs stiffened skywards for a moment, and the bull's bowels voided in a liquid green stream. The sweat-drenched warriors lifted the carcass shoulder high and bore it bodily across the arena to lay it at Mzilikazi's feet. On the third and last day of the ceremony, Mzilikazi stalked out into the centre of the cattle pen. He made a frail and bent figure in the vast open space, and the noon sun burned down from above so that there was almost no shadow under him. The nation was quiet. 40,000 human beings watched one old man, and there was not a whisper, nor a sound of breathing. In the centre of the arena, Mzilikazi paused and raised his war spear above his head. The watching ranks stiffened as he revolved slowly, and then stopped, facing towards the south. He drew back his spear arm, poised for a moment while the tension in the watchers was a palpable emanation from 40,000 charged bodies. Then the king gave a little hop and began slowly to revolve. The crowd sighed and swayed and then grew silent as again the king poised with his blade pointed towards the east. Then another little hop as he teased them deliberately, drawing out the moment with the timing of a natural showman. Then suddenly his spear arm shot forward, and the tiny toy-like weapon flew from his hand in a high, sparkling parabola and dropped to bury its point in the baked earth. "To the north!" thundered the nation. "Bayeti, the great bull, has chosen the north!" "We go northwards to raid the Makololo," Gundung told Zuga. "I will leave with my impi in the dawn." He paused and then smiled briefly. "We will meet again, Bakela." "If the gods are kind," Zuga agreed, and Gundung laid one hand on his shoulder, squeezed briefly, and then turned away. Slowly, without looking back, Gundung walked away into the darkness, which was clamorous with the singing and the sound of the drums. "Your guns would be terrible weapons if they did not have to be reloaded," Mzilagatsi piped in his querulous old man's voice. "But to fight with them, a man must have a fast horse so that he may fire and then gallop away to reload." Zuga squatted by the king's chair in a royal enclosure, as he had for almost 30 successive days. The king sent for him each day, and he must listen to Mzilagatsi's wisdom and eat huge quantities of half-raw beef washed down by pot after pot of beer. "Without a horse, my warriors will overrun them before they can reload, even as we did to the Griquas, and afterwards we picked up over 300 of their precious guns from the battlefield." Zuga nodded his agreement, smiling inwardly as he imagined the Amadoda trying those tactics on a square of British infantry. Mzilagatsi broke off to lift the beer pot, and then as he lowered it, the sparkle of one of Zuga's tunic buttons caught his eye, and he leaned across to pluck at it. Resignedly, Zuga took the clasp knife from his pocket and carefully cut the threads that held the button. He handed it to the king, and Mzilagatsi grinned with pleasure and held it to the sunlight. "Only 5 to go," Zuga thought ironically. He felt like the Christmas turkey being plucked a feather at a time. His lapel badges and field officer's pips had long since been taken by the king, as had his belt buckles and helmet badge. "The paper," Zuga started, and the king waved airily, dismissing the reference to the concession. He might be on the verge of senility, and certainly he was an alcoholic, drinking 7 gallons of beer each day by Zuga's count, but still Mzilagatsi possessed a cunning and devious intellect with a natural grasp of his own bargaining weaknesses and strengths. He had teased Zuga for 30 days, just as he had teased the watching nation on the 3rd day of the Chawala, while they had waited for him to hurl the war spear. Now the king turned away from Zuga at the mention of the concession and transferred his attention to the young couple who knelt before him. They had been accused and come before the king for judgment. That day, in between chatting with Zuga, Mzilagatsi had received emissaries bearing tribute from 2 of his vassal chieftains. He had rewarded a young herd boy for saving his herd from a marauding lion. He had sentenced to death another who had been seen drinking milk directly from the udder of one of his charges. He had listened to the reports of a messenger from the impis campaigning in the north against the Makololo, and now his attention was on the accused couple before him. The girl was a lovely creature, with long, delicately formed limbs and a sweetly rounded face with full, flaring lips over small, very white teeth. She kept her eyes tightly closed so as not to look upon the king's wrath, and her body was shaken with tremors of terror as she knelt before him. The man was a finely muscled young warrior from one of the unmarried regiments who had still to win the honor of being allowed to go in to the women. "Rise up, woman, that the king may see your shame," the voice of the accuser rang out, and hesitantly, timidly, still with her eyes tightly closed, the girl lifted her forehead from the dusty earth and sat back on her heels. Her naked stomach, drummed tight and round as a ripening fruit, bulged out above the tiny beaded apron. The king sat hunched in his chair, brooding silently for many minutes. Then he asked the warrior, "Do you deny this thing?" I do not deny it, Nkosi Nkulu. Do you love this wench? As I love life itself, my king. The man's voice was low and husky, but firm, and without a quaver to it. The king brooded again. Zuga had sat by and watched the king give judgment on 100 such occasions. Sometimes the decision had been worthy of a Black Solomon. At others, Zuga had been appalled by the barbaric savagery of the sentence. Now the king stared at the man before him, and he fiddled with the toy spear in his right hand, frowning and shaking his head softly. Then he reached a decision, and leaning forward, he proffered the weapon to the man who knelt before him. With this blade, open the womb of the woman you love. Take out from it that which offends against law and against custom, and place it in my hands. Zuga did not sleep that night, and once he threw off his blankets and hurried to the fringe of the acacia grove to retch and heave, vomiting up his horror at what he had witnessed. In the morning, the memory of the girl's screams had not faded, but the king was jocular and garrulous, pressing pot after pot of sour beer on Zuga's rebellious stomach, recounting episodes from his long and eventful life, describing vividly the scenes from his childhood and youth in far-off Zululand, with a certain old man's wistful nostalgia. Then suddenly, without any prior hint that he would do so, he commanded Zuga, "Speak the words of your paper." He listened silently as Zuga translated the terms of the concession he was seeking, and at the end he mused a moment. "To hunt elephant and to dig a hole?" he mumbled at last. "It is not so very much you wish for. Write that you will do these things only in the land below the Zambezi, east of the Inyati River and above the Limpopo." Not quite convinced that the king was this time serious, Zuga quickly added the proviso to the foot of his homegrown legal document. Then he directed the king's trembling hand to form the big uncertain cross below it. Mzilikazi, his mark. The king's pleasure in affixing the wax seal beside his mark was childlike and unaffected. After it was done, he passed it to his indunas to admire, and leaned forward towards Zuga. "Now that you have what you want from me, you will wish to leave." There was regret in the rheumy eyes, and Zuga felt a pang of guilt, but he replied directly, "I cannot hunt in the rains, and there is much work for me to accomplish in my own land across the sea. I must go, but I shall return in Nkosi Nkulu." "I give you the road to the south, Bakela the Fist. Go in peace and return to me soon, for your presence pleases me, and your words are wise for one still so young." "Stay in peace, great elephant." Zuga rose and left the king's courtyard, and his step was as light as his spirits were gay. He had the concession buttoned into the breast pocket of his tunic. 56 pounds of native gold in his chest, the stone bird of Zimbabwe, and 3 fine tusks of ivory to buy his way. The road to the south, to Good Hope, and to England lay open before him.